on today's episode of the Real Foodology podcast.
Isn't it incredible that the more nutrition studies we do, the sicker and fatter we're getting? The more exercise studies we do, the less we're exercising and the sicker and fatter we're getting. The more we spend on healthcare, the sicker and fatter we're getting. This is the point. This is the point. It's a business.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to another episode of the Real Foodology podcast. I'm your host, Courtney Swan, and I am freaking pumped about today's episode. I sat down with Callie and Casey Means. You probably know both of their names for different reasons. Callie Means has been really making headlines lately. I'm so freaking proud of him, and I'm so honored to have been able to sit down with him twice now. You may recognize him from my podcast, or you might have seen him recently on Tucker Carlson. He was also on Russell Brand. And he is really speaking out about the corruption that's happening in our food industry right now. And he's doing a great job at it. And then his sister, Casey Means, is a doctor who left the profession because she was seeing all the corruption that was happening in our medical system and our healthcare system right now. And she co-founded Levels, which is a company that's doing amazing things right now for metabolic health. I use Levels all the time. It's a CGM, continuous glucose monitor, that helps you to monitor your blood glucose levels in real time. And they are just a power brother and sister duo right now. They are in a very unique position. And I said this a couple times in the podcast where they actually got to see under the hood of what's really going on right now. And they're able to see both sides now because, you know, Callie used to work for these big food corporations and he's more on the political side. And then Casey, his sister, was in the medical field working as a surgeon, and they really got to see firsthand what is happening right now and the corruption that's going on in our country. So we talk about all this. We talk about how healthcare is the largest and fastest growing industry, and yet Americans are sicker than ever. 9 out of 10 leading causes of U.S. deaths are tied to food. We talk about why we're ignoring this. We're talking about all the policies in play right now that are keeping us sick. What is metabolic dysfunction? And how are all these chronic diseases connected to metabolic dysfunction? How is the media, the government, big food, corporate capture, all of this perpetuating these issues that we're seeing right now, and so much more? We also talk a little bit about Ozempic, and they also talk about solutions that they have, which are 6 policies that could be enacted tomorrow if our government and our senators and people in Congress really started to accept that this is an issue and push back. So it's not all doom and gloom, but, you know, unfortunately right now, a lot of our mission and what we need to do is become aware, become online and wake up to what's happening. Because the more aware that all of us are, the more awake that our population is, the more that we can start demanding for change and we can really start to fix this. So I really hope that you like the episode. I am so excited to share this with you. This just lights a fire under my ass. This was a long episode, so we split this into 2 parts. This is part 1, so tune in next week for part 2. With that, let's get into the episode. Very excited for you guys to hear it. As always, if you could take a moment to rate and review the podcast, not only does it mean so much to me, it really helps the show a lot. So I appreciate your support. Thanks, guys. I've been consuming collagen for about 6 years now. I like to put it in my morning drink, whether that's coffee or matcha. I usually prefer coffee, but lately I've actually been doing coffee and then having a matcha a little bit later. I love to mix the collagen in with my nut milk that I put in my coffee. It's usually almond milk or coconut milk. And I'm so excited to announce that Organifi has their own collagen now. As with all Organifi products, it's glyphosate residue free, really high quality. It has hydrolyzed bovine hide collagen peptides that are derived from pasture raised cows. It also has eggshell membrane collagen. It's taken from the thin layer between the egg and the shell. And this is collagen rich, and it may be beneficial for strong joint health. It also has hydrolyzed fish collagen peptides derived from wild caught fish. Because this collagen source is of a small particle size, it makes it easier to digest and more absorbable. And then there's also chicken bone broth protein concentrate in there. This collagen type is actually found in your gut, joints, and cartilage, and it helps support greater health both inside and out. Collagen is really good for lubricating the joints. It's also great for healing and sealing the gut. Often now, because of our diets, people are dealing with leaky gut syndrome, and collagen actually goes in there and helps to seal the gut. So If you're having any sort of leaky gut syndrome symptoms, collagen may be your best bet. It's also great for just replenishing collagen stores that diminish as we age and may help with wrinkles and keeping supple skin, because collagen also is what keeps our skin elastic. So this is why I consume collagen. I love Organifi. I love all of their products. If you guys want to try any of the Organifi products for 20% off, you can use code RealFoodology or go to Organifi.com/RealFoodology. That's Organifi.com/RealFoodology. Do you drink filtered water? Hopefully you do. And hopefully by now you know that tap water is loaded with all sorts of pharmaceutical drugs, pesticides, heavy metals, fluoride, chlorine, etc. But what I'm here to talk to you about today is if you are filtering your water, you've got to make sure that you're replenishing the electrolytes and the minerals back in your water. One of the ways that I love to do this is with Element. It's spelled L-M-N-T. And by looking at the package, you may initially feel a little bit of a shock with the amount of sodium in there. But if you go back and listen to my episode with Dr. James Denick, who wrote a book called The Salt Fix, he talks all about how we, for the most part, are actually not getting enough salt. We forget that sodium is an imperative part of our fluid and electrolyte balance. We actually need sodium. It's imperative to have it in certain levels. And the majority of Americans are getting most of their salt from processed packaged foods and fast foods and from eating out. So if you are not eating out a lot, which hopefully you're not, but that's a discussion for another day, most likely you're probably actually not getting enough salt. So this is one thing that I love about Element, is it has a really high sodium level, and then it also has potassium and magnesium in there. So it's replenishing your electrolytes. Also, I love the saltiness of it. There's a couple different flavors that I love the most. The grapefruit is hands down my favorite. I also really love the raspberry and the watermelon. And if you're concerned about the natural flavors, they also just have a raw unflavored as well that has no flavors in it. It just has the sodium, potassium, and magnesium in there. Element gave me a deal to share with you guys, which I love them so much for this. If you guys go to drinkelement.com/realfoodology, that's drinkelement.com/realfoodology. You're going to get a free sample pack after you make a purchase. So you get one packet of every flavor so you can try all the different flavors and then see which one you like the best. So again, that is drinkelement.com/realfoodology. Element is spelled L-M-N-T. So excited to have you guys on the podcast today. I feel like this has been a long time coming. And what we're going to talk about today is, I feel like it's going to be so fire. I was prepping for this and just getting so excited, because what both of you talk about is what I'm so passionate about. And I really truly believe it's the biggest issue that we're facing right now for our population and for society. So first of all, thank you so much for coming on.
Pumped to be here.
Thank you for having us, Courtney.
Okay, let's just like unravel all of this and really get to the meat of it today. So healthcare is the largest and fastest growing industry, and yet Americans are sicker than ever. 9 out of 10 of the leading causes of death in the U.S. are tied to food. How are we ignoring this? What's happening right now?
You know, it's so interesting. Like you really call it out that we're spending $4 trillion on healthcare costs. It is 21% of the GDP of the largest and wealthiest nation in the world. And despite increased spending that is outpacing inflation, we are getting sicker, fatter, more depressed, and more infertile every year as a population. It is the definition of unsustainable. And I think what people have to realize, and you just touched on it, is that healthcare is not only the largest industry in America, it is the fastest growing industry in the United States. There are tens of millions of Americans employed in this industry. And what every individual needs to realize is that healthcare is a business, and it's a business that's designed to grow. And the way that healthcare grows in the current financial incentive model is having more patients in the system for a longer period of time, having more things done to them. That is how healthcare grows. And we need to realize, all of us individually, and this is not to scare people, but every institution that touches your health, from hospitals to pharmaceutical companies, even to insurance companies, make more money when you are sick, and they make less money when you are well. And so I think it really comes down to following the money, unfortunately. And when you follow the money with the current incentive structure, unfortunately, there's very little political or financial motivation to create a system in which we truly generate foundational health. Because unfortunately, generating foundational health means that you've essentially lost a customer from the system. And I think, you know, Callie and I both know many doctors, and every single person I know in healthcare is a good person who went into healthcare to help patients. But unfortunately, there are $4 trillion of interest that create an invisible hand that guides every element of our medical education, our news cycles, every aspect of culture, which really gets us focused on reactive, intervention-based healthcare. And so that's where we're at right now.
And Casey and I had an interesting journey to put the puzzle pieces together. So we were both born in Washington, D.C. Kind of a success for our family was rising up the traditional system. So we both went to Stanford. I studied economics, politics. She studied medicine. I went into politics and then worked for food and pharma companies. I was a consultant for them. And then Casey, we were so proud of her, right? It was rising up the ladder, Stanford Med School and surgical residency. I was just like so proud that she was like getting all those stamps. And then I saw food and pharma companies, but I call this devil's bargain. I was working for food companies in the morning, and they're, you know, trying to get more processed food to lower income kids. And then pharma companies fundamentally profiting from people being sick because of food and not talking out about nutrition. See what Casey's dealing with the sick care system up front. So we both, through this journey, kind of putting the pieces together to each other, you know, it comes to this simple thesis, right? This simple thesis that the biggest institution in the country is incentivized for us to be sick. And it's also the healthcare industry standing by, and that it's really silent and almost complicit in the fact that we're metabolically unhealthy, which is tied to food. So we've really decided to devote our lives to unpacking that incentive. From a policy perspective, what I'm passionate about is this is not about changing marginal healthcare policies. We have to attack the fact that 95% of the $4.6 trillion we spend on healthcare is managing disease once we're sick. What would the world look like if we asked how to spend that money to incentivize metabolically healthy habits? Like, we have to get there. The American people want to be healthy, but the deck is slanted against them right now.
Yeah. And what's really crazy to me is that we're only getting sicker right now, but there's no real talk about this in politics. There's no talk about this in the mainstream narrative. Like, I don't think people really understand how sick we are right mm-hmm. now as a population. I think people are slowly starting to wake up because they know, you know, they have a family member that is, or, you know, but at the same time, like, we're not even allowed to really talk about obesity in the public, you know. Like, every time I talk about it online, I get fully attacked. And I'm like, I'm not fat shaming. I'm just trying to point out the obvious right now of what's happening. And I think that's what you two both really talk about so poignantly, is what's happening from in a media and political standpoint, where we're not even allowed to have these conversations. We're also not having these conversations on a large scale level right now.
Yeah, I think what's very interesting is okay, We know the system's kind of rigged. We know the system's stacked against us right now. But what I saw is really like deep financial incentives. So, you know, back when I was working for the food and pharma companies, we would pay people that the American people trust. We would pay influencers. We would pay civil rights groups. We would pay medical groups. We would pay nutritionist groups, mm-hmm. right? The lead nutritionist association is their biggest funder is food companies. The American Academy of Pediatrics, they accept money from Coca-Cola. The mm-hmm. American Diabetes Association of all organizations accepts money from Coca-Cola. Civil rights groups like the NAACP. Now, today, a massive bombshell report in the Washington Post very recently came out that the nutritionists attacking you are actually secretly paid for food companies. So it's not actually that complicated. It's who do people trust, and how do we toxify the debate? How do we insert fat phobia? How do we insert racism? How do we insert sexism? When you step back, it's this Orwellian situation where it's not good to be obese. And the arguments of the left and right are kind of co-opted to shame us to not call that out. The key point I have is it's not about shaming the American people. I'm a big personal responsibility guy. I was, you know, raised libertarian. I consider myself pretty conservative. When 80% of American adults are overweight or obese, and crucially, when children are obese at epidemic levels, that's not about the children being lazy. There's something happening. I don't think 80% of American adults, let's call obesity what it is. It's a visual result of metabolic dysfunction. It's not optimal. You're most likely going to live a more depressed, shorter, more tortured life with many more comorbidities. It's a national emergency. And the fact that these groups that frankly I helped pay early in my career are refereeing is absolute scandal. What I would say, I would just maybe push on one thing you said. I think the American people are really waking up. I think the BS is being called out. I think we're in a monumental year in 2024. Whatever you think of the candidates, Trump and RFK, quite frankly, if you have a three-way race, they're getting over 70% of the vote. And again, taking politics aside, the candidates that are getting the majority of U.S. Support right now are fundamentally basing their campaign of the breakdown of institutions. RFK, who's the most popular candidate among women and independents, I would say his entire candidacy is based on distrust of the medical system. Mm-hmm. So I think you hit on it. I don't think polling gets this right, but if you really go to an average American and ask what they are truly concerned about, what's truly driving the anxiety, it's that they walk into their children's school and there's clearly something bad happening in physical and mental health. And, you know, you look at U.S. life expectancy, it's on a decline. Chronic diseases are all up. This is the key driver of anxiety for the American people based on a rigged system. And I think that's what we're really trying to push is it's not your fault as a patient, it's the system's fault. And I actually think we want to radicalize and frankly see distrust when it comes to chronic disease prevention. And we can unpack that.
Yeah.
And that's the first step to empowerment. You as an individual can have more control over your health than you're led to believe.
Mm-hmm. And I would just add, you know, something that, you know, Callie and I think a lot about is like, why are our medical leaders truly standing silent in the face of these alarming statistics? You mentioned that, you know, many people don't really know how bad the health of the country is right now, but 50% of American adults now have prediabetes or type 2 diabetes, almost completely preventable, both prediabetes and type 2 diabetes being a diagnosis that represents overt dysfunction in how our cells fundamentally power themselves. I mean, this is, you know, we kind of gloss over the statistics because it's like, oh, diabetes, it sounds so clinical. But when half of this country have a fundamental problem in their cells in how we convert food energy to human cellular energy, and we are underpowered humans, this is bigger than diabetes. This is about a dimming of our life force as a species. I mean, we are literally cooling as a species because our mitochondria, these organelles inside our cells that actually do our metabolic processes, are not working properly, and every aspect of our culture is sort of stacked against them. And you would think in the face of this, every doctor in the country and every medical leader in the CDC and the NIH would just be speaking crystal clear. People, we've got to stop eating refined grains and sugars. We've got to get rid of the ultra-processed foods. We know these things are causing the problems. We got to get them out of our schools. Instead, the U.S. government is brokering deals with Kraft Heinz to put Lunchables in schools, federally subsidized. This is outrageous. And a lot of people like to say, oh, well, people don't want to eat healthy. People don't want to do this. And I think what is really a point that we want to get across is that people do listen to doctors. They told us to get the shot. People got the shot. They told us to stop smoking. Smoking plummeted. When the food pyramid came out and they said eat 6 to 11 servings of cereal grains and grain products, whole grains, people ate more carbs. People do actually listen when there is a clear, strong messaging from our leaders. And I think it is it's truly deplorable. And I think it's a sign of really widespread cowardice that our medical leaders aren't using every platform they could possibly get on to speak absolutely plainly about what Americans need to do. Get rid of the processed food, get rid of the refined carbs and sugar, exercise, move every single day. You got to get good sleep. You got to get the environmental toxins out of your products. You know, you've got to be outdoors more than 6% of your day, which is what the average American is spending outdoors. Why is this not everywhere? And I think part of it loops back to our cancel culture. The industries have weaponized the rise of social media to silence people and to silence conversation, and everyone is afraid. And I think there's a real spiritual crisis going on in America, because what I see especially in the medical community, is that people are afraid to speak authentically because they're afraid of the repercussions. And I think that what I just really, really hope for the world is that we get back to realizing that life is short. We are here for a brief moment. And if we are not speaking from our heart, speaking plainly, having moral leadership, saying what's true inside of us, we are like a stagnant, sort of sad version of ourselves. And I think, interestingly, this sort of fear in speaking, this block in the flow of our authenticity that we're seeing on a mass scale in our culture, it mirrors what's happening with metabolic dysfunction. Metabolic dysfunction is literally the blocking of energy flow in the body through the mitochondria, through mitochondrial dysfunction. So I think we're just seeing this big, sad stagnation of human potential that's mirrored in culture, it's mirrored in our cells. And if we want to unlock the full human potential of our country, we have to start by unlocking the potential of the cells, which means orienting the $4 trillion arrow of American healthcare right at the mitochondria.
Wow, that was so well said. That was so well said. I also want to say that, so there was a couple statistics, because you dropped one statistic about 50% of Americans being at least pre-diabetic at this point. There was a couple of other stats that really shocked me. One was 80% of 21-year-olds are ineligible for the military.
Yeah.
This is a national security threat at this point. And another one, I think I heard this on a recent podcast you were on, Callie, which was 72%. So there were 72% more evacuations out of Iraq and Afghanistan for obesity-related problems than war injuries.
Yeah. So this is why I think, you know, just really in case he's, I think the best message to the country on this is that obviously, metabolic health needs to be the framework of how we view health.
Mm-hmm.
I have never been a health guy. I, as I said, grew up really caring about U.S. policy, U.S. competitiveness. But it is so obvious that metabolic health has to be the central public policy goal because our human capital is being denigrated. Mm-hmm. And let me just unpack what metabolic health means to me.
Yeah.
Metabolic health, the key principle is that it's simple. And there's a couple, numerous legs to the stool, but a finite number. It's obviously food. When we're feeding the American people ultra-processed poison, when that's gone from 0% of our diet to close to 70% for kids in 100 years, when we have thousands of chemicals that we don't even know about that are banned in other countries, when we have glyphosate-laden grains that we're recommending from the American Academy of Pediatrics to be the first food for our kids, right? When we have liquid sugar, which is really a new invention, which is a weapon of mass destruction for blood sugar, when these things are not only tolerated but recommended by the government for our kids, we obviously have an assault going on the food front. Sleep, we're getting 2 hours less sleep than we did 100 years ago. There's actually been an assault on our circadian rhythm and sleep, which is extremely important. There's been a lot you've been talking about and others on you know, health podcasts I love about the importance of circadian rhythm, the importance of light, the importance of sleep. I mean, that's such a basic principle, but it's very important. Stress management, we have weapons of mass destruction for chronic stress in our phones that we're giving every single kid. A child today is absolutely unparalleled what they're facing for a chronic stress, you know, and it's just hijacking their evolutionary, their biology to keep them constantly in fear, constantly addicted, constantly stressed to sell products to kids, in my opinion. So there's that happening. So it's these basic metabolic patterns. The other one, of course, is movement and sedentary behavior. Oh. We've never used to have gyms. We just had movement built into our daily lives, but through public policy and decisions, right? We have these schools that are basically factories really created by Rockefeller to literally turn children into, they're designed
worker
in a factory
bees.
Model, worker bees. They sit in a sunless room, sedentary. So you literally, as a matter of health policy, as a matter of public policy, should just take each one of those verticals and just ask, how can we improve these inputs to our population that produce thriving, you know, and Casey talks about the science much more eloquently, but like, obviously when we have an assault on those things, that's where we need to start. And, you know, that's where our book's about. And I think we've really lost our way, that medicine is so siloed, that metabolic health still sounds like a French concept to the people, you know, in academia, you know, that these things are almost fringe. It's the core to everything and needs to be how we guide public policy and guide medicine.
Did you know that your olive oil might not be real? If you follow me on Instagram, you know that this is quite the topic of discussion right now on my Instagram. Unfortunately, a lot of olive oils are being cut with lower grade, cheaper oils like soybean and canola oil. Not to mention, a lot of these supermarket olive oils are just not fresh. They can sit on the shelf for many months growing stale. Now, I love a good olive oil, but by good, I mean fresh. Olive oil packs the most flavor and the healthiest nutrients when it's fresh. That's why I've really been loving getting my olive oil from Olive Oil Direct from small award-winning farms, thanks to a guy named TJ Robinson, also known as the Olive Oil Hunter. When I tried TJ's Farm Fresh oils, I fell in love with their vibrant, grassy flavors. I actually texted my podcast producer and I said, they taste really peppery, like real olive oil. Like I could tell that it was real olive oil. They're incredibly delicious on salad, veggies, pasta, meat, fish, you name it. Now, as an introduction to his fresh pressed olive oil club, TJ is willing to send you a full size $39 bottle of one of the world's most artisanal olive oils, fresh from the new harvest, for just $1 to help him cover shipping. And there's no commitment to buying anything now or ever. So get your free $39 bottle for just $1 in shipping and taste the difference that real olive oil makes. All you have to do is go to getfresh324.com. That's getfresh324.com for a free bottle of olive oil and pay just $1 shipping. Getfresh324.com. Did you know that most cookware and appliances are made with forever chemicals? Yes, that means your nonstick pans, your air fryers, your waffle makers, your blender could possibly have PFAS. And yes, even our beloved crock pots and pressure cookers. I have actually been talking about this for so long. Back in 2006, my mom came to my dorm room and made me get rid of all of my nonstick pans because she was concerned about me being exposed to something called Teflon. Teflon is a coating that is used on nonstick pans and a lot of these appliances that I just named. So I've avoided Teflon, nonstick, PFAS-coated appliances, pots and pans, you name it, for a very long time. And the only option for a very long time was just stainless steel pots and pans. So I was really excited when a company like Our Place came out because they started creating really beautiful cookware and appliances that are like pieces of art. Every appliance that I have from Our Place, I legit want to store it on the counter. And I'm the type of person that does not want anything on my counter because I like it to look really just clean and minimal. But I'm so obsessed with all the Our Place products that I have so many of them displayed on my counter because they are legit pieces of art. Our Place is a mission-driven and female-founded brand that makes beautiful kitchen products that are healthy and sustainable. All their products are made without PFAS, which are the forever chemicals, and also made without PTFE, which is Teflon. If a company is not outwardly stating that they don't use these chemicals, then if they are using nonstick coating on their appliances, they are absolutely using forever chemicals. And there's been increasing global scrutiny for their impact on the environment and our health. And recognizing this impact, the EU plans to prohibit PFAS by 2025. Our Place has always been PFAS free and they offer durable toxin-free ceramic coatings, ensuring a healthy, safe cooking experience. And let me tell you, you guys, they are changing the game with non-toxic appliances. They have a blender, they have an air fryer, they have a crock pot, not to mention their amazing always pan. They have a perfect pot, which is just the perfect size for soups. And they also just came out with a cast iron that I am loving as well. And I more recently replaced all of the bowls and plates in my kitchen because I really needed an upgrade. My other ones were so old. So I got some from Our Place and they are so beautiful. The ceramics are beautiful. The colors are amazing. Like I said, everything is like a piece of art. If you want to try any of the products from Our Place, go to fromourplace.com and enter my code REALFOODOLOGY at checkout to receive 10% off site-wide. That's fromourplace.com, code REALFOODOLOGY. Our Place offers a 100-day trial with free shipping and returns. And you two are both in a really unique position because you both got to see under the hood of what was going on in the medical system and then big food capture and the political side. So from your eyes and having looked under the hood and then also looking at what's happening right now when we're dropping all these statistics, what are the biggest issues in your eyes that are happening right now from a political and a medical standpoint? As far as like doctors being paid off, the funding is coming from these big food corporations. How is this messaging, like you just said, being co-opted right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think I might just start with a story about this really like my awakening in healthcare, which was I was in my fifth year of surgical residency And I was training as a head and neck surgeon, a chief resident, and I was on my sinus surgery block. And I had a patient who I talk about in the book, whose name was Sophia. And she had was in for her third revision sinus surgery. Mm. And she had several other health conditions, like so many Americans. She had high blood pressure. She had hypertension, high blood pressure. She had high cholesterol. She was overweight. Had some depression, et cetera. So I'm there in the operating room, gloved up, staring down at this patient on the table, and I have my drill in my hand. I'm about ready to literally bust through her skull, in her face, to suck pus out of her sinus. Mm. And I look down at her. And it's so morbid, surgery. Like, it's so intense. And I'm looking down at this patient, and I'm like, I really have no idea why this patient is sick. I have no idea why she's here. Like, I know how to prescribe steroids. I know how to prescribe antibiotics. I know how to drill through her face and suck pus out. But, like, what is truly wrong inside her body? And, you know, I remember doing the surgery and being done and thinking, like, this patient's going to be back. And, like, she's also going to still have a shorter, sadder life because of all of her other conditions. Mm-hmm. And so I think this gets at really the core of what is the problem that you're asking about, which is that the doctors are not trained to truly understand the root cause physiology that is leading to disease. We are trained as worker bees to diagnose based on symptom-based and biomarker-based criteria, to attach a diagnosis to that pattern, a constellation of symptoms and labs, and to prescribe an intervention or a drug and do it as quickly as possible. That is good medicine. That is respectable medicine in our system. But you ask a doctor to explain to you how depression, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, prediabetes, obesity, sinusitis relate to each other, you're going to get blank stares. And what I realized, and what I think a lot of doctors don't realize, because we're so, you know, entrenched in this cult of guideline-based, evidence-based medicine, is that at every level, their education was influenced by so many organizations with a vested interest in those doctors intervening, that the religion that we have subscribed to mm-hmm. is fully based on essentially, like, incentives that they're not aware of. And so going back to Rockefeller and the Halstead model of disease management and the Flexner report and these core pieces of really subliminal influence of the healthcare system that we then spend 10 years rising the ranks of. And of course, you're going to be loath to question that after you're $500,000 in debt and, you know, you've got a mortgage payment. But that's what I'm really asking doctors to do, is to really think deeply. Like, you know, you see doctors, they're dealing with a huge crisis of mental health. Suicide rates in doctors are some of the highest of any field in the country. And burnout is, in some specialties, over 80%. And I think a real core root cause of this is not because just they're overworked. It's because on some level they understand that they are trapped in a broken system, and it feels too big to shift. But it shifts by us waking up and speaking plainly about the issues in the system. And one of the biggest issues is that we do not understand the root causes that are connecting disease. And like you mentioned, 9 of the 10 leading causes of death in the United States right now are fundamentally rooted in metabolic dysfunction. And so that's what we really need to all pursue deep education in as doctors. And as Callie said, realize that it's actually quite simple to dig your way out of metabolic dysfunction. So, you know, that's a big piece of it.
Yeah. And just adding on to that, something we talk about in the book that's been a helpful framework for me, and I hopefully for others, is when you talk about the biggest issue, I would frame it on how we're attacking chronic conditions. Mm-hmm. I think there's this, as we're kind of impugning the healthcare system, a lot of people, and I used to be this way, it's like, well, haven't we produced miracles? Hasn't life expectancy extended double? You know, aren't we living in a great situation? And I think we have to say a couple things. Yes, the medical system has produced miracles. Yes, I wouldn't trade probably living in this era versus others in a lot of ways. But we should unpack what those miracles were. And if you do, I think if you think of a miracle like antibiotics or emergency surgical procedures for various things that were life-threatening, you know, go down the list, they're almost always something for an acute situation, something that was killed you right away, And these are usually innovations that were discovered before 1960. When we think of medical miracles, it's almost always, again, for something that was going to kill us right away. As Peter Attia pointed out in his book, if you actually control for infectious and chronic diseases, life expectancy hasn't risen in the past 100 years. It's almost all been driven by these, you know, sanitation and the antibiotics and these, you know, it was more deadly to for a woman to give birth 100 years ago than have breast cancer today. It was several percent of women died during childbirth. I mean, it was absolutely the most dangerous thing a human could do. It was solved for things like that. I think what the thing we need to unpack is the medical system post-World War II, you know, which was won by large measure from the invention of antibiotics and some medical innovations. They took the trust of science and said, you need to trust us on chronic conditions. Mm-hmm. And chronic conditions, which now make up 95% of medical spending, are one, a beautiful economic invention because you don't cure the condition and the patient doesn't die. They actually maintain their sickness and get other comorbidities that you can treat in silos. So it's a beautiful economic invention that the patient doesn't die but stays sick. And it's been an absolute disaster. There's actually not a chronic disease treatment I can identify that's been correlated with the lowering of the chronic diseases ostensibly trying to treat. You know, statins, more heart disease, metformin, more diabetes, SSRIs, which 25% of women in the United States are on, depression and suicide. So we'll probably get into Ozempic, which is literally they're estimating that obesity is going to rise as more Ozempic is prescribed, which you'd have to explain to me that one. But that is consistent. That is consistent with every single chronic disease. So what I would say, just as a general framework, and I think this, you know, parents, and I have a new child, it's like, when do we trust? Trust your doctor if your child has a life-threatening infection. Trust your child if there is a, like, dire medical emergency. Absolutely, the medical system's a miracle. But if your doctor is saying, you know, that your child has elevated cholesterol, if your child needs to potentially go on a statin like many kids are on, if your doctor's talking about your child's mental health and trying to put them on an SSRI, which are popped out like candy at high schools, if your doctor's saying they have ADHD and need to go on a methamphetamine, Adderall, which are, you know, 15% of high schoolers are on, you really take a step back. Because what's happening there is you're implicitly saying to your child that their chronic condition, which is a metabolic condition at its root, is a pill deficiency. Mm-hmm. And inevitably, you're getting them on that treadmill where they're not learning metabolically healthy habits, which are vital for their lives and the success and thriving of their lives. They're seeing that there's a cure. And let's be very clear. The American Diabetes Association until 2018 said that the cure for diabetes, that you don't actually have to monitor your diet. You don't even have to change your sugar intake. They were ashamed to change this, but until 2018, they didn't even have sugar reduction guidance for diabetics as long as they took their medication. The obesity doctors are literally saying obesity is genetic, not tied to what you eat. Just take the Ozempic. This is the message. It's very clear. Statins, it's a wonder drug. Oh, the doctors say this. Talk to anyone with a statin. They tell the guy they're prescribing the statin, oh, you can continue eating your burgers. That's the message of these drugs. Mm. So you just continue racking up the comorbidities and the criminal thing, what's happening. I think the biggest war in a way in the country right now is that there's a battle to get kids on this treadmill because start them younger, you know, get on that chronic disease treadmill. So that's what I'd say, acute versus chronic.
I'm always looking for ways to improve my mitochondria because our mitochondria are our life force. They are the battery of the cell, after all. My boyfriend loves to frequently remind me that that's the only fact that he remembers from biology. But mitochondria actually are so imperative to our overall health. When our mitochondria start to decline, everything else goes with it. That's when we really start to see signs of aging. So it's so incredibly important to support our mitochondria in any way that we possibly can, which is why I take Timeline Nutrition MitoPure to support my mitochondria. It contains an ingredient called Urolithin A, and that alone significantly increases muscle strength and endurance with no other change in lifestyle, according to the clinical studies. Timeline Nutrition has loads of studies. They are a global leader and Urolithin A research, and their products are NSF certified for sport. If you want to go back and listen to the podcast episode I did with the founder, we go over in depth all about the research, and we talk about all the amazing benefits of MitoPure. For example, maintaining muscle health, which is incredibly important to longevity and enduring good health. It also has postbiotics, the active nutrients your body makes during digestion. They're an emerging driver of good health. And Urolithin A is one of the first postbiotics shown to have major health benefits and has become available to all of us in Timeline MitoPure. It also upgrades your body's cellular power grid, giving your body the energy it needs to optimize. Also, this is purely anecdotal, but I do have a friend who works one-on-one with clients for nutrition, and she had 5 or 6 different women take Timeline MitoPure and improve their egg quality and egg numbers when they were doing egg retrievals. So when I went and froze my eggs, I wish that I had known about this because I would have taken this before I froze my eggs. Again, that's just purely anecdotal. There's no studies to back it up, but it is something interesting. They come in soft gels. They also come in their protein powder, or they have just the simple powder that you can buy. I get the ginger powder and I put it in my drinks every morning. Timeline is offering 10% off your first order of MitoPure. Go to timelinenutrition.com/realfoodology and use code realfoodology to get 10% off your order. That's TimeLineNutrition.com/realfoodology. I recommend trying their starter pack with all three formats. And I heard you say this very eloquently recently, that it's as if we have a dirty fish tank. Mm-hmm. And instead of cleaning out the fish tank, we're just medicating the fish.
Yeah, I was recently at a playground with my 2-year-old, and I got really emotional. I looked at every single kid I could identify, 5 years old, clearly was metabolic dysfunctional, clearly had some weight issues. There's, wrappers of ultra-processed food and soda bottles all over the playground. The kids are eating them. So we have this dirty tank. We're literally, through corruption, are poisoning our kids. It's just that simple. Our kids are ingesting poison. The USDA, where 19 of the 20 advisors who made the nutrition guidelines were paid for by processed food companies. You'll have to explain this one to me too, but the 2025 panel of the scientists announced on the panel that, again, make the guidelines for our children, 40% of them are paid by Novo Nordics, the maker of Ozempic. Literally, they're paying off the people making our nutrition guidelines. These are very corrupted people, literally creating guidelines saying that they've actually just said a diet 91% in ultra-processed food for kids that can be healthy. They say that 2 years and up, that 10% of their diet can be added sugar, which is just crazy. We don't recommend a recommended range of cigarettes for kids or alcohol. I don't think sugar should be banned, but that's insane to recommend
it.
So we're actually, that's the tank. We're like, by design, poisoning kids. And it's just this horrible sci-fi movie where we're doing that to our population and then saying, as the American Academy of Pediatrics is shouting at the top of our lungs, for 12 years and up, it should be the urgent intervention, a first line intervention for an obese or overweight child is a lifetime shot. A lifetime shot of liquid bulimia that paralyzes your stomach. So that isn't crazy. You would never design a system this way. Obviously, if we're systematically poisoning kids, you should stop poisoning kids, because these micro-siloed drug solutions clearly don't work. And it's just not the answer to that underlying metabolic dysfunction that's caused by the poisoning. So
yeah.
There's a lot of efforts. There's a lot of money to prevent every institution of medicine from obscuring that fact, from medical schools to insurance companies to hospitals to pharma companies. It's the largest institute in the country, and it's predicated on obscuring that fact.
Yeah. So, or were you going to say something else? Okay.
Well, I was going to just mention, a big point in the book, in Good Energy, that Callie and I make is that everyone's walking around feeling confused about nutrition and confused about healthcare. And there's been studies that show that 80% of consumers feel that there's vastly conflicting information about nutrition, and over 50% of them are just abjectly confused about what to eat. And that is not a function of the fact that it actually is confusing. It is the purpose of these studies is to make it confusing, because if you are a confused consumer, you're just going to seek out scattershot solutions to your problem. And you're going to, buy this health bar, and you're going to buy this book and that. They want it to be confusing. Isn't it incredible that the more nutrition studies we do, the sicker and fatter we're getting? The more exercise studies we do, the less we're exercising and the sicker and fatter we're getting. The more we spend on healthcare, the sicker and fatter we're getting. This is the point. This is the point. It's a business. And so a big message that Callie and I put forth in the book is that, is that it's actually very simple. Health is fundamentally a matching problem. you have cells, you have 40 trillion cells, and those cells have a basic way of operating that we pretty well understand through our basic science research in our country. And we need to match the needs of those cells to the environmental inputs. And when the environmental inputs match the needs of the cells, we have health. And when they don't, when you either do not meet the needs of the cell or you overburden it with things that are toxic, you have symptoms and you have disease. A symptom cannot arise out of thin air. A symptom is necessarily the result of cellular dysfunction. So for the kids who have the behavioral issues and who have the sleep issues and the ADHD and the obesity and their blood sugar is rising, parents need to realize that is necessarily the result of cellular dysfunction. And cellular dysfunction is the result of a cell's needs not being met or a cell being poisoned. So really what we just need to do is just back up and look at our environment and look at what our cells are being exposed to around us on every aspect of diet and lifestyle, which is food, sleep, exercise, stress management, what's happening to our microbiome, the light we're being exposed to and the temperatures we're being exposed to and the environmental toxins. Look at those things, take stock and clean it all up. And when you do that and you match the evolutionary needs of our cells with our environmental inputs, which is real clean food, real clean water, lack of synthetic toxins in our food, water, air, home, personal care products, not getting artificial light at night, getting real light during the daytime, being outdoors, moving our bodies, we have health. It's really very simple. And the quibbling about the minutiae of all the little health protocols and the health hacks and the endless studies and the cult of, you know, evidence-based medicine, it's actually part of the problem. We need to keep it simple.
Yeah. Well, but the biggest issue that we're facing right now is, so people are confused, but then also the system is rigged against us right now. You know, like I was just thinking, Callie, as you were talking about these poor children that are essentially being poisoned. Yeah. And I think about all the, so just this week, I've had three separate moms send me a screenshot of their children's lunches at school. And I was horrified. Right. It's burritos, Tostitos, Doritos, like it's all this processed Goldfish. And the system is rigged against them right now. You brought up Lunchables. So Lunchables has a massive contract now with all these public schools across the United States. So it feels like there's this coordinated attack and the system has been rigged against us. So what's happening with all that? Because you guys speak so eloquently to this. Right. And I really want people to understand really what's happening. Yeah. And then what can we do as an individual?
So just stepping back, one framework I have is just super simple, that pharma is the largest payer of money to media, to politicians, yeah, to research organizations, to medical groups, to tech companies, tech ads, you know, to control what we see on the various social platforms. So literally, I mean, like they pay five times more in lobbying and political donations than the oil industry, three times more than any other industry. So they actually pay the bills. The FDA itself, 75% of the bills are funded by pharma. It's not taxpayer money. It's literally pharmaceutical money. And of course, it's a revolving door between pharma executives and the FDA panels. So they're actually bankrolling the situation. So let me give you an anecdote about the Lunchables and how this gets into schools, because I think it's really important to unpack like exactly how this happens. So you might remember that there was this NIH Tufts nutrition study that said Lucky Charms are healthier than beef. And I think we all talked about that. It was kind of funny. It's actually very serious because it's so ridiculous that we laugh at it. But the purpose of those studies is to influence schools. Actually, on the press release for that particular study, it said the goal of this study is to influence childhood nutrition guidelines. Mm. So what you do is you have food companies spending 11 times more on foundational nutrition research than the NIH. As Casey said, there's been 50,000 nutrition studies in the past 2 years. So there's this mound of nutrition studies that are not arguing usually for pasture-raised beef or broccoli consumption. They're arguing almost always for processed food and why processed food is okay to eat. That, you know, why would you need to have a study on natural, unpoisoned food? No, so you
they're
do
also
these,
not making money on those foods.
Yeah, so when you have these studies, so they're funding the studies. Then they bring those studies to members of Congress. I've met with 50 members of Congress in the past year, and they tell me time and time again, they're like, I'm a military guy. I'm not a health expert. I'm not a doctor. I'm on the health committee, but I have lobbyists coming in day after day after day. And it's not always just abject corruption, but the lobbyists come into the office and slam the studies down and say, if you go against this for the nutrition guidelines, you're anti-science, and we're going to attack you for being anti-science. So those studies from Tufts, from Harvard, from Stanford become science. And then they're used as a club to attack other decision makers and opinion leaders and school boards and members of Congress and, you know, people who make just various dietary regulations. That's the club of science. Then you have the media. The media receives 60% of their funding from pharma. By far, they're the largest spender. So pharma's paying the bills. I think it's very interesting that you don't have examinations of this corruption on mainstream media. You didn't have examinations of why nobody that was metabolically healthy was dying of COVID and how COVID was basically a foodborne illness of metabolic dysfunction and really preyed on weak immune systems. You have the media in this country as actually referees for anyone even questioning the pharmaceutical industrial process complex and frankly processed food. They're very different than the media is supposed to be or used to be. They're enforcers of the status quo and try to ruin anyone who questions it. So that's what the media, it's very interesting, right? Where you have, during COVID, you have the mainstream media absolutely bashing anyone over the head who says COVID isn't anything other than a pharmaceutical, something that the pharmaceuticals can fully solve. And then you have all independent media from Joe Rogan on down to you, to all the health podcasts, actually talking about metabolic health, actually talking about the need to eat healthy and exercise and how these could be potentially related to, you know, getting a COVID or getting other conditions. Those people were attacked. So the people actually literally saying to eat healthy and exercise, like there's leaked emails from the NIH. They're saying they were enemy number one of science misinformation. So that's how it all works. You're buying the research, you're using that research to influence the members of Congress and regulators who are also directly paid, and you're enforcing that message on the media who you're paying for. So you just, it's not actually that complicated. What I think we need to do in this country, and I think is happening through the podcast and independent media revolution, through politicians, I think, who are waking up, you know, through bio wearables and people taking control of their own health data, through the best-selling books being about these concepts and moving to a new era of medicine. You know, people are waking up, but it's got to be a bottoms-up revolution where we basically just stop accepting the bullshit. And then I think that could eventually force top-down change, which has to happen, because we're not going to win if we have, you know, trillions of dollars of incentives against us. But that's how I'd explain it.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Real Foodology Podcast. If you liked the episode, please leave a review in your podcast app to let me know. This is a Resonant Media production produced by Drake Peterson and edited by Mike Fry. The theme song is called Heaven by the amazing singer Georgie. Georgie is spelled with a J. For more amazing podcasts produced by my team, go to resonantmediagroup.com. I love you guys so much. See you next week. The content of this show is for educational and informational purposes only. It is not a substitute for individual medical and mental health advice and doesn't constitute a provider-patient relationship. I am a nutritionist, but I am not your nutritionist. As always, talk to your doctor or your health team first.